Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today on episode number 68 of the show, we are talking about another movie from a few years ago, continuing our directors series. We talked about Steven Spielberg last week. So this week we're talking about Kathryn Bigelow, who directed Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker and some other things as well, Detroit. But we're going to be focusing on Zero Dark Thirty today. So that's what we'll be reviewing. Katie, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Jared. How have you been?
I'm good. Not too bad. So we don't have much news for today, so that's going to be pretty short. But some movie theaters have started to reopen. That's kind of the only thing, is that AMC and Regal are going to reopen kind of all of their locations, or a lot of them, here very soon in the next couple of weeks. So, and some new movies are starting to come out in the theaters. So things are starting to kind of get a little bit back to normal in terms of movie releases, and less and less stuff is getting delayed now than it was earlier in the pandemic, but still skeptical of going to a movie theater right now.
Same. I've been hearing mixed reviews, mm-hmm. if you will, about schools and how that's going. Schools going back in session and stuff. So I definitely want to stay away from movie theater still. Also, I'm having a really fun time with what we've chosen, because we know what we have coming up on the Silver Screen Podcast.
Yeah. So, and it's all either things that we have seen before, or obviously we haven't seen, but having something that we have seen before, it gives you a sense of like familiarity with it, which is nice. So you kind of already know what to expect. So the only other news I have is that as of yesterday evening, recording this on Saturday, the 22nd. So yesterday on the 21st, the final Tenet trailer came out. It wasn't that much different from the other two trailers that have come out so far, because Christopher Nolan isn't going to, you know, show a bunch of new stuff in his trailers, but got a few new things in there, and it still looks pretty interesting and pretty good, and still had the same release date set of September 3rd. So we'll see if that happens or not. So, but I think we're getting a little too close to it now to, you know, move it back really.
Yeah,
if they would probably already have decided on that, if they wanted to do that. So
Jared, he's just getting that movie out to make sure it's out in time for your birthday.
Yeah, that's very nice of him to get it out the week before my birthday. That way I can possibly, you know, it'll be out on my birthday, which is nice. So don't know if I'm going to go see it in the theater or not yet. That's still to be determined, but it'll be nice that he decided to, you know, move the release date to around my birthday. So other than that, no other news, and then no corrections for this week either, because we crushed it. So we didn't have anything to correct for ourselves. But we do have some recommendations. So my only recommendation this week is a documentary called Boys State, which is on Apple TV Plus. It won Best Documentary at Sundance and then also at South by Southwest earlier this year. And it is about every year the American Legion in various states selects a lot of boys or girls to go and kind of do this 1 week summer camp where they kind of come up with their own government and elect, you know, the governor and their representatives and their senators and all of that stuff. So this one focuses on the state of Texas, and it's called Boys State because it focuses on the boys side of things. But very good documentary, very interesting to hear from these high schoolers about what they think about politics and how they, you know, feel about elections. And how they campaign is very interesting in it too. And it's only about an hour and a half. So, but it's a very good documentary. So if you have Apple TV Plus, definitely check that out. I know we don't recommend too much stuff on Apple TV Plus, but that was really good. I enjoyed watching that earlier this week.
Yeah, Jared, you told me about it earlier and you made it sound so good that I've added it to my queue. And I still have plenty to watch. I'm trying as hard as I can to catch up on everything, but that sounded really intriguing. And I remember people going to Boys and Girls State, but I never did it. So
I didn't either.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Well, I have a very similar recommendation in the tone that it is a semi-political and also a documentary. I watched Becoming this week on Netflix, and it is Michelle Obama, but it's about her book tour for the book she wrote, Becoming. It was fantastic. It brought me to tears multiple times. It does not focus on this is like her platform and these are like the politics she stands for. She talked about just the office of the president, but how important the first lady is and what she wanted that legacy to mean and what she learned from other first ladies. And she also just talks about growing up and a lot of what's in her book. So if someone doesn't want to tackle reading the book now, which I highly recommend still, this is a great introduction to it and well worthwhile. And it was just very hopeful. So if you're kind of feeling down right now, I really recommend this documentary. And then I have two books briefly to touch on. I read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn by Betty Smith this last week, and The Chestnut Man by Soren Zweistrup. I think I'm saying that right.
Okay.
So The Chestnut Man is a book of the month book. it is huge. It's like 500 pages. It is a straight up horror film or horror book, excuse me. It was excellent. I was not expecting it to be this good. But the man that wrote it, Soren, he was also the co-creator or creator, I think, of The Killing, that show, The Killing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I never watched that show, but I know that it got a lot of praise. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised this book was as good as it was. So highly recommend that, The Chestnut Man. And then A Tree Grows in Brooklyn by Betty Smith was written in the 40s. And it's semi-autobiographical. It was basically a memoir that she wrote, and then her editor had her change some of the stuff so it wasn't a straight up memoir. But the book was so good. I'm very surprised I hadn't read it before this year. We're reading it for our book club for work, but I read it in just a couple days. I could hardly put it down, and it is definitely considered a classic. And it reminded me a lot of Little Women, which if anybody listens to this podcast knows, that's quite a lot of praise coming from me. So if you're a fan of Little Women or you like memoirs or biographies and stuff, I definitely recommend A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Nice. Nice. Very nice. So I also finished the Hank Green book that I was reading. So,
oh, yes.
Definitely did enjoy that. So I think I gave it 4 stars on Goodreads. So an absolutely remarkable thing. And like I said last week, the second book in the series just came out earlier this year. That first one came out back in 2018. So that one's been out for a couple years. But I put the second one on hold at the library, and it says it could be 5 to 6 months before I can get that copy. So, you know,
perfect.
It is
going to
be quite a while before I am able to read the second one. So
talk to you next spring.
Yeah, exactly. When I finally can go pick that hold up. So that is all of our recommendations, though. So now we'll discuss Zero Dark Thirty, which came out in 2013, January 11th of 2013. It's rated R for strong violence, including brutally disturbing images, and for some language. It's 2 hours and 37 minutes. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on, because that's definitely one of our possible dislikes for this movie, is that it is so long, although it is very good. IMDb is 7.4 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes, critics 91%, audience 80%. So audience a little lower on it.
Yeah.
I think that could be due to the fact that it is just so lengthy, and like it's building tension the whole time, but like nothing super duper like action-packed thrilling happens until like the last 45 minutes. So
yeah,
it could be people just saying, oh, when I saw the previews of this, I thought it was going to be like more of a action war movie. And it, you know, it is, but it's not, it doesn't have as many like action sequences as one of those types of movies would have. So So those are those reviews. And then at the box office, it made $95 million domestically and $132 million worldwide. So it did pretty well box office wise. Was this also not, this was nominated for some Oscars, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So
I might need to check exactly what they are for.
I know Chastain was nominated, but.
And Catherine Bigelow was nominated, but this was not the movie that she won for Best Director.
That is correct. So if you don't, while we look that up, if you don't know, the synopsis for Zero Dark Thirty is a chronicle of the decade-long hunt for Al-Qaeda terrorist leader Osama bin Laden after the September 2001 attacks and his death at the hands of the Navy SEALs Team 6 in May of 2011. So this is based on a real-life event that happened, the killing of Osama bin Laden, and that happened back in 2011. And then the movie came out in 2013. So from the time that that event happened to the time that the movie came out, things moved pretty quickly. Like 2 years is not that long for them to write a script and come up, you know, with what they want to say and get the movie produced and get the movie released. So
it's
a very fast turnaround.
Jared, you can definitely fact check me here, but I do believe it was nominated for 5 Oscars.
Okay.
It looks like it did win for best sound editing. Way to go.
Okay, congrats.
I know you and I, every year for the Oscars, we're always like, how do we pick which one is going to get what you know, for sound editing and sound mixing. But
then that'll be like the ones that we're off on our, yes. like gets us the win. Like one of us will win because we picked the right one and one of us picked the wrong one. So, but
exactly.
it's never, we always like go pretty much basically the same picks on like best actor, best actress,
yes.
best director, best picture, all that. But then like those small categories are the ones where it like can throw off your whole ballot.
They get you. But it did win for sound editing. Jessica Chastain was nominated for best actress. Catherine Bigelow was nominated. She was nominated under Best Picture. So it was one of the Best Picture noms because now they do, I know you know this, but now they do, if your movie is nominated, it's like the cast and the crew, or the cast and the director also would get an Oscar if you win. And the producers, of course.
Yes.
It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. Mark Boal wrote it, B-O-A-L, and then Best Film Editing as well. So it only won Best Sound Editing, but
nice.
I'm seeing five nominations listed.
I looked up who else was nominated in that year. So
yes.
for Best Actress, the nominees, along with Chastain, were Jennifer Lawrence, Emmanuel Riva, I can never say her name correct, from Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Quavonjane?
Yeah, Quavonjane
Wallace. I remember her, Quavonjane Wallace. I haven't seen her, though,
Naomi
in a while.
Watts was also nominated, and Jennifer Lawrence won for Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, that was that year, and she tripped falling up the stairs,
yep.
and that's and all then, anybody talks about.
Who helped her out? I forget. Was it
somebody
came up there and
was
helped
it Brad-
her?
No, it wasn't Bradley Cooper.
Hugh Jackman? I can't remember. I think it was maybe Hugh Jackman. I can't remember.
I'll look that up.
And then this was nominated for Best Picture against Argo, Amour, Beast of the Southern Wild, Django, Les Mis, Life of Pi, Lincoln, and Silver Linings Playbook. And Argo won Best Picture that year. So that was a stacked Best Picture year, though. That was a lot of good movies in that list. So
seriously. Oh, guess what? We were both correct.
Okay.
Hugh Jackman and Bradley Cooper rushed to her aid.
Well, there you go. So That's what happened in that scenario. So this did come out, as we said, in 2013 and then was nominated for a lot of Oscars at the 2012. It would have been the movies that came out in 2012 for the 2013 Oscars, pretty much. So some of the critics' reviews for this movie. First up, we have Scott Marks of the San Diego Reader. He says, when it comes to establishing and maintaining tension, there wasn't a better American genre picture released this year. Refrain from viewing it as a historical record and you won't leave disappointed. So I like that review. And I think that's one thing that you found out some facts later on about what's true in the movie, what's not true in the movie. That's one of the criticisms of the movie, is that some things that are in the movie aren't totally based on what actually happened in that scenario, in that situation. So I think that's one of the places where the movie draws a decent amount of its criticism from, is just that some things aren't historically accurate. So, but
yes.
We'll talk about that more.
Definitely. I really liked this quote because I thought it summed it up perfectly, that if somebody said, hey, should I watch this movie? I would use this quote and say, like, hey, if you're just going for entertainment value, absolutely. If you're looking for a historical record of what really happened, no.
Yeah. Next up is Tom Charity of CNN.com, who says, what's striking in the absence of triumphalism, Bigelow doesn't shy away from showing the victim shot down in cold blood in the compound, and we come away with the overwhelming sense this has been a grim, dark episode in our history. Yeah, it's definitely, once they get into the final 30-40 minutes of the movie, when they are actually, you know, acting on the plot to go kill Osama bin Laden, and basically that plays out in real time, it does get very tense and very dark, and, you know, a lot of people die, obviously, and so you see all that play out. The way she decides to shoot that, by basically just using, you know, like a handy cam and having somebody shoot that's like in there with all the soldiers, is definitely an interesting way to film that. But it makes you feel like you're just a part of SEAL Team 6 who's going to kill him. So, and then finally, we have Anne Horningday of the Washington Post, who says, from the very first scenes of Zero Dark Thirty, director Catherine Bigelow demonstrates why she is such a formidable filmmaker, as adept with human emotions as with visceral, pulse-quickening action.
I loved that quote, too, because we are focusing on directors, and I was so excited to talk about a female director. And I do think that's a major, major like for me about the film, is that Catherine Bigelow, all of her films, she is so good about getting like human emotion involved. And you care so much about the characters, where I don't know, something, it just grips me more than a lot of other movies. And I think it is partially because she is a female director and just has a different perspective.
So, talking about her, this movie is directed by Catherine Bigelow. So, she became the first woman ever to win an Oscar for Best Director. She won for The Hurt Locker in 2008. She was also nominated for Zero Dark Thirty for Best Picture, which we mentioned. And then she competed with her ex-husband, James Cameron, for the Best Director Oscar, and she beat him out. So that's one of the better Oscar moments that you've seen from the last couple of years, which is funny. So, and you guys spell Catherine the same way. So
we do. Way to go.
Some other movies that she has directed throughout her career, of course, we mentioned Zero Dark Thirty, and then The Hurt Locker. And then she's also directed Detroit, which I have not seen, but is on Hulu right now. I know it's been on there for a while. It came out in 2017.
Yes,
so.
I did check it the other day, 2 days ago, and it's still there. I don't know how long they're going to keep it there, but it didn't say it was expiring soon. But I definitely plan to watch that because I've heard nothing but exceptional things about that movie.
Yeah, so good to excited to check that one out on Hulu. And again, that is there. And then she's directed some other things as well, but nothing that was really as big as those four movies that, that we mentioned. So we will take a quick break here on the Silver Screen Podcast, and then we'll talk come back and talk about the cast and also our likes and dislikes for Zero Dark Thirty. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Zero Dark Thirty, which came out in 2013. Hitting on the cast now. First up, we have Jessica Chastain.
I love Jessica Chastain. Thank you so much for that crush alert. Because we shouldn't only leave it for the males.
Of course.
She plays Maya in this movie. I am so impressed with her. And I remember, I'm almost positive that The Help was the first thing I saw her in. Okay. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that would sound correct. Yeah.
Yes, because I didn't want to say it and then be completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure that she first stood out to me in The Help. But then I saw her in this and I was like, this woman is a force and she is going to win an Oscar. But we discussed her in episode 60 of the podcast when we did cover The Help. She's been nominated for 2 acting Oscars for both The Help and this movie, Zero Dark Thirty. She's also known for Interstellar, Tree of Life, and Molly's Game, which I recently watched and really enjoyed. She has 8 upcoming projects listed, but I know. So you'll hear about her again, guaranteed. But I'm most excited for her to play Tammy Wynette in a movie called George and Tammy.
Also, how could we forget the obviously most exciting movie that she was in last year, It Chapter 2? I mean,
that's right.
We have to mention that.
I can't believe I forgot that.
That movie even longer than this one. So somehow a horror movie about a clown was longer than a movie about the plot to kill Osama bin Laden.
That's ridiculous.
So.
Also, yeah, you and I both had mixed feelings about It Chapter 2, but she is really good in those movies.
She is. So.
So next up we have Kyle Chandler. He plays Joseph Bradley. His wife, her name is Catherine Chandler. I just wanted to point this out because Catherine is not a unique name in any way, but she also spells it the same way as Catherine Bigelow and myself. And I was just reading his biography and that was the first line in it. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so weird. He's been nominated for 5 Emmys. He won in 2011 for the character he played on Friday Night Lights. He is also known for Argo, Manchester by the Sea, and Bloodline. I know Jared and I both really liked the show Bloodline. It was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And next up, he's going to be in Godzilla versus Kong, which I put gross. And then also a movie called The Midnight Sky. Also, I should give Godzilla a fair shake. Who knows? Maybe it'll be great. But I feel like Kyle Chandler is one of those people that is so beloved. Like when his name comes up or he is in a movie and things, I think people just love him.
Mm-hmm. And Friday Night Lights, I really enjoy. I didn't watch all of that. I didn't watch all the seasons, but I have seen probably the first 2 or 3, and he's really good in that show that came out back in the mid-2000s or so. That's a really good like sports drama show, but he plays the coach of the high school football team in that show, and he's really good in that role. So I think he always plays kind of like down-to-earth characters that are somewhat like stern and like very direct in what, you know, they're portraying or whatever, but he always comes across as being very like natural and how this would be an actual person you would probably meet in real life. So
And I feel like he also falls into the Tom Hanks category of like shouldn't necessarily play a villain. I don't know. Like it's not like they're incapable, certainly capable, but is good of like riding that fine line between being kind of like stern, like you said, or being a director of something or, you know, but he reminds me a lot of his roles remind me a lot of what Tom Hanks does as well. Next up, boy, do I have something to say about this, Jared. So this is Jason Clarke. He plays Dan. He's an Australian actor. You might have seen him in Mudbound, Everest, and Terminator Genisys. I also would love to point out the way Genisys is spelled. G-E-N-I-S-Y-S.
It's got to be edgy.
Oh. And then I put this, this is what I need to bring up. Everybody talks about Jessica Chastain, Isla Fisher, and Bryce Dallas Howard. They think they're the same person. I, every time I see Jason Clarke, think it's Joel Edgerton or vice versa. I'll see Joel Edgerton and I'll be like, oh, it's Jason Clarke.
And Joel Edgerton is also in this movie.
I know. It was, and I actually, I did forget that because I had seen this movie several times. But I was rewatching it. And then when they get to the SEAL Team 6, I was like, wait a second. And then I was confused because I was like, is that? And then that's when I looked it up. But I, if anybody listens to this podcast and wants to reach out to us, please let me know if I am not alone in thinking that Jason Clarke and Joel Edgerton are the same person. I even looked up on Google. I Googled, do people think their names like they're the same person? And a bunch of pictures did pop up. So I don't think I'm the only person. But I had to mention it because in this movie, it was bizarre that I was watching. And then I thought, wait, why is he part of SEAL Team 6 now? And then I realized what was going on. Anyway, next up, the main thing you can see him in is The Devil All the Time. We wanted to bring that up because we are definitely planning to review that on the podcast. It is going to be in on Netflix on September 16th, if I remember correctly. But it looks really good. And I've been looking forward to this one for a while.
Has our boy Tom Holland in it. So
yes,
get ready. So yeah, that's going to be a good Netflix movie and a new movie, which I'm excited to talk about that coming up in a few weeks. So,
And then there was an outstanding supporting cast in this film. So I just wanted to list some of those actors: Jennifer Isle, Harold Perrineau, Jeremy Strong, James Gandolfini. That was sad to see him because I completely forgot he was in it. Rita Kateb, Mark Duplass, Edgar Ramirez, Chris Pratt, long before he was really famous. Taylor Kinney, who I recognize too because he's on the Chicago shows like Chicago Fire, I believe, and then Joel Edgerton, which we already mentioned, but it bears mentioning again. But it's a fantastic cast. I could not believe how many people were in this movie before they really like hit it big, if you will.
So with this movie, we mentioned that some things in the movie that happen are historically accurate. I feel like once they get to the end where they're actually trying to kill Osama bin Laden, most of the stuff that happens in that sequence is fairly accurate, as far as I understand it, to how it actually happened on the day that it happened. But some of the stuff leading up to that is not entirely historically accurate, kind of the backstory of things and how we got to that particular point. But I know you found some facts and what's fact, what's fiction from a couple of different sources. So we'll share some of those things with you now about what's real in this movie and what's kind of made up or they fudged a little for dramatic effect.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate your use of the word fudged as well. I did want to tell you, I almost mentioned this whenever I talk about Argo. I always think the movie is Argo, fudge yourself, which is like the quote from the, because I feel like you hear it so much in that movie that I always think, oh, that's the title. It's not the title.
No, it's not.
But anyway, so fact or fiction, I looked up a couple articles. I was genuinely curious about this, but thought other people might want to know. I found my information on Reuters.com, WashingtonPost.com, and Wikipedia. So it's just a few things, but Jennifer Isle's character was based on a real life agent, Jessica Matthews. She was killed by a suicide bomber. All of that was factual. This came up multiple times in different articles I read that people were very upset about her portrayal in general because they said she was, quote, like portrayed as a, quote, fluffy headed schoolgirl.
Okay.
That came from Cindy Storer, who is a former CIA agent who was close to her and worked with her. So I thought it was definitely important to mention. However, I disagree with that. I thought her character was delightful in the movie. And really, to me, she just seemed like someone who really cared about welcoming someone onto the compound and, you know, getting to know Maya and reminding Maya that, yeah, they're doing something that's top secret and very intense, but they're also human beings that need sleep and food and social like aspects. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. So we definitely wanted to say that it was very, I appreciated that they based a character on Jessica Matthews, and it was horrible that she was killed by a suicide bomber. Mm-hmm. But they definitely, former CIA agents want you to know she was not a fluffy headed schoolgirl.
Okay.
Also, apparently the torture scenes, those came up multiple times too. They're very inaccurate. It's not at all to say that kind of torture doesn't exist, but from what it sounds like, that is not how they got a lot of the information for, specifically for Osama bin Laden and a lot of this intelligence. So the agents, a lot of them wouldn't say anything further on that, but then I found another article on WashingtonPost.com. So there's a 31-year-old CIA veteran agent named Jose A. Rodriguez Jr. He said torture was only used if detainees were not cooperative and if they thought they had extremely valuable information. And he said on the rare instances, they would use waterboarding, but it was very seldom used. He did say they definitely would do sleep deprivation and some sort of collar, but it wasn't really as inhumane as it's portrayed in the film.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty. Those scenes are pretty intense in the movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't
terrible.
Know if all of those were necessary because like
totally.
There's like three or four of them. I think one would have gotten the point across. But the fact that there's like four of them is just a little intense. So yeah. A little extreme, I think.
Yeah, it did help formulate my opinion on like maybe if I had to make this decision, it colored my view, if you
well,
will.
And you can see like how it's affecting Jessica Chastain's character too, because she's in the room when a lot of it is happening. She's not really doing, she does a little later in the movie do some of the torturing, like get in their face, yell at them, ask them where stuff is. But you can see the first time she goes in to like watch that happen that she's definitely like visibly shaken up by what she just saw occur. So
definitely. And then what Bigelow did get right, though, because there were plenty of compliments on what went well with this movie. So Zero Dark 30, this is just a fact. It is a military term for 30 minutes after midnight, but it also refers to the darkness and secrecy that cloaked the decade-long mission to kill bin Laden. I thought that was fascinating because it was a decade-long mission. Mm-hmm. And I just liked hearing that term. I think that's cool when you can learn facts about like military stuff like this.
Yeah.
Rob O'Neill was the agent who killed Osama bin Laden. I did look that up because I didn't realize that his name had been released because I know right after it happened, it wasn't. But it's not something I go to look up a lot of the time. However, I told Jared the other day, Rob O'Neill came up in the news, which was a complete coincidence because, you know, he didn't know we were watching this movie and going to talk about it on the podcast. But he was not in the news for a good reason. He apparently was on a plane and a commercial airline and refused to wear a mask. And it wasn't only that. He said some really crass things that I won't repeat about people who were wearing masks. And it was very disheartening, I have to say, just to hear the way he was talking about things and to other people. And I was like, man, I really want to respect, you know, your title and what you've done for America and stuff. But at the same time, you sound like someone I would not really want to know.
Yeah. So, and that airline has since banned him for posting that and saying those things, which it was Delta. We'll just go ahead and say that.
Thank
so,
you. Delta good Airlines. For you, Delta.
Yeah. It reminds me of that joke that John Mulaney has in one of his stand-up specials. He's like, let's just go ahead and theoretically come up with a crappy airline. And just for fun's sake, we'll just call it something like Delta Airlines. Like, he's just like so like nonchalant about the fact that he really does not, and John Mulaney, not a fan of Delta Airlines, but yeah, Delta Airlines doing
Delta.
Something right this time. So way to go, Delta.
And just a couple other things. So the information that led to this conclusion was the work of a huge team of people like that figured out this where Osama bin Laden was and how to carry out this mission. But it was primarily driven by women, which I think was awesome. Mm-hmm. And it was women that work in the Counterterrorism Center. I do think all of them are retired. I'm not positive, though, so I didn't grab that information.
I feel like that'd be a very high-stress job and one that you wouldn't want to like do for 35 years or anything.
Yeah,
so.
And also when you, I feel like a lot of people want to retire when they can go out at the top of their game. I feel like that would be the mission to be like, okay, I don't know that we're going to get anything
you
better
know,
than this.
When you when you killed the worst terrorist we've had in recent memory, you're like, I think this is going to be the highest that we could possibly achieve. So,
but what a fantastic story. And I so appreciate that Catherine Bigelow chooses to do movies like this. And not that, I mean, I obviously love dramas and rom-coms and all that, but it's great that she chooses to do movies that are more like, I think, difficult to watch, high stress, usually based on
true events. Yeah. So
I think that's great. And I also think it's very telling that women, maybe having women at the center of something like counterterrorism, like intelligence, that maybe there's something to that. And I hope people recognize it. And I appreciate that this movie points that out. So she definitely got that right. And then lastly, this was a 10-year marathon that required cooperation and partnership between the military and the CIA. So that's definitely definitely true. They got that right in the movie about how they had to work together. And from what I read from several accounts, it's true that it has greatly improved since September 11th, 2001, that those two organizations have been able to work a lot better together and recognize that they need to in order to pull things like this off.
Well, that's good. So, yeah. So that's basically all the facts that we have about the movie. So we'll move now into our likes and dislikes for Zero Dark Thirty. So first up, the one like I know for you, especially and for me, is that the female characters are really well portrayed in this movie. It's directed by a female director. Main character is a female, about a real life story that a female was highly involved in. So the fact that that was told the way it was, I think, is definitely a positive for this movie. If this was directed by a male director, I don't know if it would be as good. I'm not sure. So
yeah, I think the female characters are the best part of the film. And I did kind of touch on this, so I don't want to bore people, but I just like that Kathryn Bigelow brought such emotion to this film and just really focused too. Like I didn't have to know anything about how Maya's character grew up, but I understood that she was a driven individual. I understood that she had issues with torture. I understood that she was someone that would stay dedicated, like not eat or sleep, wasn't there to make friends. I could tell all of that because of the way that these people were portrayed in the film. So I think Kathryn Bigelow did an exceptional job. And I like that she chooses those types of movies, specifically to warfare. Like, I bet if she wasn't nominated for an Oscar or if she wasn't a famous director, I bet a lot of people would have assumed a male directed this. So I love that it was her behind the helm.
So one thing I do really like about Kathryn Bigelow is that you mentioned she tackles the tough subjects, and mm-hmm. we get so many like war movies that are based on like older wars instead of more current situations. So like with this movie, and then like with the Hurt Locker, that focuses on the Iraq War and kind of what happens during that, and follows like a explosive team that, you know, disables, you know, bombs and things. So that is interesting as well, and the fact that she's choosing to focus on like more current events than going back in history and focusing on something that's like 70 years old or something like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I have not gone back to watch The Hurt Locker. I remember, I don't think it grabbed me in the same way as Zero Dark Thirty, mm-hmm. but I do think I need to watch it again because I remember being super impressed by it. I think that was the first thing I saw Jeremy Renner in and Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, yep.
But I remember, like, even the fact that I remember they're in it is telling that it made an impression on me. But yeah, she's an amazing director, and I love the female characters and just that emotion and stuff she brought to the film.
So I already mentioned the cast a little bit, but the cast are really good in this movie. The acting's really good, obviously, from everybody in this movie. So I wanted to point out to Chris Pratt, just because this is not very much like an on-brand role for Chris Pratt. He normally plays the funny guy, the easy-go-lucky type in Parks and Rec or in, you know, other things that he's been in, Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. So the fact that he plays kind of one of the leaders of SEAL Team 6 and is very serious in this movie and still has some funny moments and stuff, but definitely more of like a different type of role for him. But I thought he was really good, and I forgot he was in this, and then he shows up for like the last 40 minutes. So
yeah, I did forget he was in it. He didn't stand out to me as much as like I really like the few moments we have with Edgar Ramirez too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think he stood out too because I loved him. And I watched the assassination of Gianni Versace this year, but also he and Jessica Chastain are real friends in real life. So I thought it was cool to see him, and I don't know why he specifically stood out this last time that I watched it, but yeah, all the actors are so good. Shout out to the casting director because they made some fantastic decisions about who to cast, especially with some of them not being big names yet.
No. So, and next up, you mentioned kind of the outfits for this movie. One of my like least favorite things that'll happen in a movie, and this happens in the Jurassic Park series. So we're going to mm-hmm. bring Bryce Dallas Howard in for a second.
Who, okay.
You know, people confuse her and Jessica Chastain, as you mentioned, all the time. But yes. Like Bryce Dallas Howard will be running in the Jurassic World movies, and she'll have on like a very nice outfit, blue jeans, high heels, and is like running away from dinosaurs. And it just doesn't seem like super realistic. Where right. as in this movie, the way they dress Jessica Chastain and even like what they do with her makeup and her hair and stuff like that, it all looks very natural. Like this is probably what she would wear. Yes. in those situations.
I completely agree with you because I think she is such a stunning person. I probably am attracted to her too, because she makes me feel better about being so fair skinned as well. I'm, honestly, like, she really is one of the people I think that has similar coloring that I have. But I thought that she's beautiful, but I feel like they did everything that they could to make her not quite as naturally beautiful, but it not at all that she looked hideous, but I'm saying I thought this was completely realistic. Like, her hair and stuff being just kind of like a mess, or looking like she hadn't slept in days, or the fact that she didn't have mascara and lipstick and stuff on, that makes sense to me. I believe that character. I believe that agent probably was like that. But I thought it was completely realistic and really good decision making, because you're right. Movies like Jurassic Park, it does take you out of the film for a minute, because you just think, how are they running in 3-inch stilettos? Why are they wearing 3-inch stilettos to this park? In this movie, I never thought that. If anything, I just was like, wow, I did wonder what you would wear in the desert, that kind of climate and stuff, to keep you cool and make sure sand doesn't get in your eyes and all that stuff. So really good job with the costume design and makeup and everything to make Jessica Chastain specifically look really realistic.
So did you have any other likes before we move into our dislikes at all?
I have one last thing. I like that the movie brings up a really controversial and complex topic. I kind of mentioned that earlier when we're talking about torture and stuff. That's something I hate most about the film, except I do think that this is something where I'm always grateful when I watch this movie that I don't have to make the decision. Like, I don't think I could be president. I don't know that I could ever be the person that makes this call. And I still, to this day, I hope it's okay to say too, that I have very mixed feelings about this. Like, absolutely, Osama bin Laden was a piece of trash and probably should die. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I would have been the one to want to make the call. And I do understand what happened and my role in patriotism and how much I care about what happened on September 11th. And I would always say, let's defend our country. But at the same time, I don't know that I love the way that we did it. I don't love that how many people were murdered in the compound that night, not just him. That's the kind of stuff that makes me go like, I wonder, this is a really complex issue. I wonder what I would have said. So I love that that's brought up and that she makes you kind of see both sides too, like the good and the bad about it.
Yes, for sure. So with that, we'll move into our dislikes for Zero Dark Thirty. One dislike is that this movie is a little too long. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes. So that is very lengthy for a movie, you know, and we don't mind longer movies on this show. I prefer shorter ones normally, but I don't mind the long one occasionally. But I think the way this movie's structured is, I get that they have to set up the story and they have to kind of, you know, signify that a long amount of time has passed since they started working on this to when they actually go in and, you know, kill and capture Osama bin Laden. So I understand that they need to show some time there, but I feel like it is just very lengthy. But the last, you know, 30, 45 minutes is very good. But like getting up to that point, I feel like just takes a while until we get to the actual mission to go kill him.
Yes, I even thought of a specific scene that I was like, man, this scene takes forever. It's the scene, unfortunately, where Jennifer Isles' character dies by the suicide bomber. That scene goes on for like 10 minutes when I don't think it needed to. Like, you could have just shown this car driving up and he looks suspicious and they're like, what's going on? What's going on? And he blows them up. They like show the whole trip from like, oh, we're waiting, it's all afternoon, and then you see a car in the distance, and then we watch the whole route of the car. To me, I get that some of that built tension, but like, that was just an example of a scene that I was like, we could have cut that down to 2 minutes, not 10. But I think easily this movie could have been closer to 2 hours. I don't think I would cut down the night scene where they actually go into the compound, but yeah, there is so much leading up to that that I would cut down. So yeah, definitely a huge dislike for me is the length of the film. And it's a big part of why I don't watch this movie very often.
So another dislike for this movie is that when you do have something that is so historically significant, you would like it to be like very historically accurate, which this movie is not in all the in every place, which we mentioned kind of in our, you know, what's true, what's not a few minutes ago. So that's another dislike, as well as the fact that when you do have a movie with a historical subject, you want it to kind of be as accurate as possible if you can.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't really have anything else to add to that. Just, I would prefer accuracy. And I think that it can get dangerous when you're not accurate, because then a lot of people get their facts messed up and, you know, it's got a ripple effect.
And then the only other dislike is that the violence, which we already mentioned, is kind of hard to watch at times, especially the torture sequences when they're torturing the terrorists that they've already captured or people associated with Osama bin Laden trying to find out more information about him and where he's located and things like that. So those scenes can get very difficult to watch. I think that's how you can make the movie a little shorter, too, if you cut some of those out. Like I said, I think one is fine to show us kind of how that process works and what's happening, but I really don't need to see them go torture the same guy four times, you know, in the movie.
Yeah, I think you said it really well earlier too when you were saying the torture scenes, like I feel like they could have just put one in there or two. I'm with you on that. Like I get the point, and it's fine to show us something horrifying, especially if that's something we do. But I don't know that I needed to see four or five of those scenes to fully grasp how bad it is. So the violence, really, the torture scenes specifically are really hard for me to watch. And then also at the end, when they went in the compound, I did not look up what was accurate about who was killed that night. But at least in this portrayal, there's two young boys that were killed when they stormed into the compound. Now, they shot at the officers, so I get it. But they were teenage looking. But that was also hard to see, where I was kind of like, man, I don't know that I needed to see that. But if it's accurate, then good. I mean, that should be in there. But that stuff is hard. The violence makes this movie pretty difficult for me.
So that's all of our dislikes for Zero Dark Thirty. So we'll go ahead and give our grades now for the movie. So Katie, what are you going to grade this one out at?
Okay, I thought about this. This is a movie that I basically, this movie made me figure out if something is not rewatchable for me, like over and over and over all the time, I grade it lower. So I think that makes sense. But anyway, I put this at an 85. So I'm right in the middle of the critics and the audience. I do think it's extremely well done, well told, engaging and interesting, but I have issues with the length and the violence. And also it's definitely not a movie that I'm like, let's break this out every Christmas and enjoy. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but 85.
Nice. I'm going to go just a little bit lower than you, give it an 82 out of 100. So okay. Kind of right around the same area. Same things that you mentioned. It's a little long. Rewatching this is not the most fun rewatch in the world. You know, I don't think, like you said, it's one that I pull out a lot to rewatch, just because it is such a heavy subject and such a tough movie to watch. So, you know, if you are rewatching this like every 3 months, then there might be, you know, you might want to find more happy movies to go watch. I don't know. It seems this is just a weird one to watch over and over again. So,
yes.
Yeah, that would be my rating for this, is an 82. So also, we did not mention, but if you have the Amazon Fire Stick, you can go to imdb.com/TV, and this movie you can watch for free right now on IMDb TV. You just have to view ads during the movie, but that's how I watched it. And the ad breaks weren't that bad. There was like six or seven of them, and they were never during like super tense parts of the movie, and they put them in good spots, and it was kind of just like you would be watching it on, you know, TV, but it's the whole movie unedited. All that stuff's there. So, but you can watch it for free on IMDb TV, which if you have, again, I said, if you have a Fire Stick, then you can just scroll to that app and you'll see it and find it on there. So
awesome.
That is our review for Zero Dark Thirty. And on our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, we're going to talk about another iconic director. And that is, of course, Francis Ford Coppola, who has directed numerous movies. But the one that we're going to focus on the most is The Godfather from 1972. So, which is very lengthy. Another very long movie in addition to this one, but we'll be talking about that on the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, which I'm excited to talk about that. It's been a while since I've watched that movie, but obviously one of the more iconic, you know, mob gangster movies that has ever been made.
Me too. I'm so like gleeful on the other end of this recording. I cannot wait to watch this movie. It's one of my favorites. It's super long, but worth it. I feel like there's so much to unpack about this film.
For sure. So that'll be our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. You can find us on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram, and just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook to find our page. And then wherever you're listening, be sure to rate and review. That always helps us out. Leave a star rating or leave a little review. We always appreciate those greatly. And on the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, we'll be reviewing The Godfather.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.